if you love hip hop.
Whatever you're in the mix.
If you love
hip hop. Double ass Malone.
Gotcha.
Small Malone. You tell me that I was not economically viable. And yeah, I thank you for 7 years. 7 years. Excuse me, sir. Excuse me. How'd your loan ever go? Did they give you a loan? He must be economically viable. There's a man with a smile on his face. He looks like a happy customer. That's what an economically viable person looks like.
Yes, good morning, Winter Park. You're listening to WPRK 91.5.
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are, here in Winter Park. The voice of Rollins College, the best in basement radio, and this is Punkonomics. And you're a host of Punkonomics today. We're trying to have as much as fun and chatter today, because obviously we're going to be talking about some things that kind of gets us upset. And anyway, let me introduce you, our host of the show, Dr. Benny Babeck.
Hello.
Oh, wait a minute. Here we go.
Hello.
Yeah, Friday, informal Fridays.
Informal Fridays.
And my name is Jesse Velez. I'm also the host of Punkonomics, your Friday show where you get to get angry with us and talk about things that nobody else wants to talk about. And of course, we try to dispel some myths, concerns, and try to clarify the air, which, of course, today we are going, let's talk about the IRS. You already brought it up. You already got my blood pressure boiling. Not too much.
First of all, I have to say, as I did post a little bit earlier, that and it's all coming to me, you know, because I'm teaching a movie class right now for the winter, a week-long kind of intensive course, having good fun with that. And there's one movie that came to mind to me this morning, despite it not really being appropriate for a serious academic class, yet one of my favorite nonetheless. Well, the story is that I've got one of those, like so many people out there, I've got this nasty cold that turned to sinusitis, I'm eating antibiotics and feel like I'm about 99% snot. And in fact, just to function, you know, I wake up really early because I need about an hour to slowly get, you know, the Kleenex out of my nose and so many nose drops, you know, nasal drops, that I feel like Jason Statham, Statham in Crank, you know? Those who saw the movie know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Definitely not appropriate for all audiences, please, be advised, but a very ironic kind of action movie, which I like a lot, actually. It's very politically incorrect.
Very correct.
IRS. Well, I was late figuring out my taxes, not being able, realizing that I'm paying like 20 over the years, you know, here, you know, paying a member of the middle class, roughly, paying 20%, you know, of my salary and taxes, not really understand, TurboTax not really being much help in explaining to me in what way, what can I claim, what can't I claim. I'm overpaying, man. I gotta do some, maybe try and save a little here and there. So eventually got an accountant, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, there was a certain delay in my payment of my taxes recently. And I just found out this morning, when the bill came, that they charged 4.5%, which has got nothing to do with the actual market where the real interest rate is close to zero. And I was saying, like, well, I guess the late won't be too bad because interest rates are so historically low.
Right.
But no, apparently not. But hey, you know, I mean, you know, you gotta, right? Somebody's gotta make money, you know, where are you gonna raise the money to fund wars, to bail out bankers? I mean, it's important, right? To give tax breaks to millionaires. And since the IRS cannot tax the billionaires because they don't pay, or the corporations because they don't pay, and there's been a bit of a storm on my status. I love it when a little snide remark.
That's how we stimulate the economy. But you know, mentioned
to get it somewhere.
You mentioned TurboTax, and this is definitely FYI for everybody. Because personal story happened to me. I'm going through it right now, and it's the reason why I didn't want to listen to the words letters IRS today. But I did TurboTax.
Yeah, and then we stopped.
Yeah, TurboTax. You know. Good program, very simple, the whole bit. Everybody uses it, it's very popular for those of us who can't afford a CPA. well, if just so you know, you need to recheck your TurboTax, because if you are receiving any kind of disability or Social Security and you're not at the age where it's non-taxable,
it doesn't pick it up.
TurboTax does not recognize that. And what will happen is that after a few years of doing TurboTax, you might turn out to be owing tons of money to the IRS because that program does not. Yes. And I'm sure there's some other bugs out there, you know. Yes. So FYI, you get what you pay for. You know, I should have known better. But at the same time, you kind of wonder, you know, where does it stop? Settlements. I didn't know that you had to pay taxes on a settlement. It seems to me that Uncle Sam is just taking in money that he doesn't deserve. Because let's say in a case where somebody got run over by a car and they get a settlement, why should they have to give Uncle Sam money for a pain they incurred? That I want to understand. If somebody could please explain that to me, you can call us at 407-646-2915.
Yep. Well, you know, I mean, to bring it back to, you know, because I'm one of those economists that don't understand anything about the real economy. I can't even balance my checkbook, frankly, you know. my wife constantly, hope she's asleep, still constantly mocks me that, you know, I can't, like I said, even balance my checkbook, but I'm really good on the World of Warcraft auction house, you know.
She always
makes fun. Why didn't you do it for real? Because it's not fun. So I don't know all these practical things. It's nothing irritates me more when, most people, when they hear, so what do you do? You're an economist. Well, really? Most people just kind of look at you funny and turn around and leave the room. But as if, you know, but, and I understand them, frankly. That's why it's painful. Because I understand why. And the others will, so what should I do in the stock market? I don't have any stock. I don't even have any savings. I'm just any other fool on the street, you know? I mean, what do you think? I do know a thing or two, having been interested for years with the bigger picture, with the history, the forest rather than the trees. So we talk about the notion that you know, TurboTax in Florida, you can probably get a free edition because you don't need state. Otherwise, you're paying, $40 for the software a year. Then, of course, if you're doing it last minute, as everybody else, you have to maybe pay that extra $50 to have it, like, you know, right away, electronic payment. You end up paying $100. I'm not counting your time trying to figure it out. $100. An accountant will do it for you for $300. You know, it's not, you know, that expensive comparatively. Certainly, if they end up saving you, some money
and some grief,
and some grief that is very actually in our life. I mean, I think we talked about, you know, the shootings and all that stuff that I keep saying. There's and another one. Yeah, you know.
The grief, the stress, the
feeling of not being in control, all of these things are really the source problems that we have to make us crazy. It's not something coming out of our DNA or our water. It's society that's to blame. But one of the problems with taxation is that when you are extremely wealthy, you can hire an army of the best minds that will find ways to, often very legally, make you pay very little taxes, as indeed you do.
Right.
Let alone the lobbyists. Remember that this recent study, I mentioned it a couple of times, I think it bears mentioning every week, that the rate of return to investment on lobbying in America is 22,000%, right? And you spend a buck buying a congressman, you get back $220 in, for example, being allowed to poison and murder children, and the Koch brothers are the poster child children for doing that.
Right.
The solution of, oh, raise taxes on the wealthy, again, it's just like the gun control issue, right? I mean, okay, whatever. If you can save one kid, I'm returning my gun tomorrow, okay? But I'm not sure. I'm not sure that you'll save much. I think it's posturing again. It's not really sadly solving this problem, a problem that needs solution. Don't get me wrong. The whole arm everybody is a complete joke. Actually, in Bill Mayer's radio program, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, somebody raised the joke that Archie Bunker, remember that? Some of the old people?
Yeah.
The best thing on television, All in the Family in American history, had actually a joke in which they were poking fun at the idea that how do you make planes secure? You arm all the passengers, said Archie. You know, when you get on the plane, they give you a gun each. And that's how you secure
the... Complimentary with the peanuts. Right.
But back then in the 70s, people thought that is an ironic joke. Today, it's it's policy, you know, so because the NRA is saying it. And, you know, I feel the NRA, but please, gentlemen, I mean, don't be silly.
You know, that's what I understand. I've been paying attention to these latest meetings that Joe Biden has been trying to have with the NRA and all that. And I saw an interview with the president of the NRA, and it really shocked me that the attitude that he had was of no negotiation. Mm. This is what we want, you know, or this is as far as we're going to go, and that's it. And he's basically turning around and saying, well, the Obama administration, you know, they're the ones that are not wanting to come in the middle. And it's kind of like, well, if you're going into a negotiation and you already have your mind set up, then why even bother?
You know,
just send the president not saying, sorry, you know, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, people
instead
people
of wasting people's time.
That's how it's done. I mean, you have to compromise. It's the nature of the political beast. It's the nature of society. The minute you have more than one person, politics raises its ugly head, and you have to compromise and negotiate. This is something that's been discovered by our ancestors in the Stone Age, or probably before. In fact, animals even know it, sometimes I think better than us. Those who didn't learn that lesson are, well, have gone extinct, you know, just like we are. By the way, that's another topic in the back of my head increasingly. Some recent reports are really... It's irreversible already. Now we're talking about just how horrible the environmental catastrophe is going to be. I mean, the science is just overwhelming. It's remarkable just how stupid we are. It's my personal, not my Punkonomics, my personal Facebook picture is from one of my favorite movies, Blade Runner, where Chris the android says, then we're stupid and we'll die.
Right. Exactly.
That's how I feel.
You know. Unfortunately, if we can actually say we're stupid and then we'll die, then I guess there is some kind of, oh, okay, well, they're stupid. But the truth of the matter is, and kind of you've basically taught me this, people are not really stupid. Mm. They just refuse to accept reality and make the choices that
I have to believe that.
To
you know, I have to believe
and
that.
And I know that you're saying that
otherwise
because
I
of
give
hope.
Up.
Right.
Yeah, otherwise I give up. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, the cottage industry about, people think, I criticize American policy a lot. I criticize everybody's policy, even people, you know, all the time. Yeah,
sure.
True. So what, but it comes from, like the great Cornel West says, you know, from a place of love, you know? I think there's a cottage industry. I think those, again, with the American flag on the lapel of their expensive suits, you know, are the ones who are spitting in your face. They're calling you idiots, lazy, takers, ignorant, et cetera, et cetera. It's a cottage industry, you know, of calling the people. First of all, I recognize this rhetoric. It resembles very much, just translated into French, and that's exactly how aristocrats and their apologists were talking just before the French Revolution, you know? So I'd like to remind people that. Now people aren't stupid. People aren't ignorant. They're not ignorant. They're brainwashed.
They're brainwashed,
I like to
exactly.
think. I mean,
yeah, right,
sure, right. They're ignorant too, I mean, in a sense. But again, we like it that way. So I have to hold on to something positive in my life, or I will really, other than my family, you know, I will really sink into depression and go crazy.
Here's something positive, if not humorous, which could be positive.
Humor is necessary to survive.
I text you about the Obama coin, and I'm sure you probably thought that I was just joking and all that, but
it's
for real. It's in the news, and it's saying, and this is from The Griot, So, you know, take it for whatever it's worth. It says, according to the press briefing transcript on Washington.gov, the reporters asked repeatedly whether the Obama administration would seriously consider a $1 trillion coin to prevent default. And Mr. Carney did not explicitly rule out the trillion dollar coin option. But it seems to me, you know, and I ask you,
it's a
Dr.
joke.
Ballet,
it's a pretty good joke.
Is this kind of like a carnival thing, or is there any way they can actually coin this and say, oh, okay, let's toss this? And
I'm never shy to admit that I don't know the details. I've read one article about this, kind of in the stream, if you will. I don't know but apparently there's a legal loophole because much of our law, many of our laws, have been written in an era where the economy, the financial structure, was extremely different. In fact, that's a whole topic unto itself. Our almost fetishistic attachment with the Constitution. Once again, it's fetishistic. We should be attached to it when it matters, like on civil liberty, by the way, and that's definitely an opportunity to be an equal opportunity hater among conservatives and liberals, Bush, Obama, everybody the same. But in some place, the fetishism is where you're attached to unimportant things, to irrelevant things. So when it comes to guns, and you know I'm ambivalent about it, so we've had a show about it recently, the notion of the Second Amendment, read it. It's got nothing to do with having and arming kids in school so that the good guys, the only way to stop what's the NRA, right? The only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. It's a completely different matter. Or this idea that by stocking up shotguns, we can somehow are going to stop the shock troops of the American army that'll come to enslave us. I mean, like my Alex Jones, that was all over the internet, some of you have seen, where he went a little bit ape on CNN, and I kind of like him because I disagree with about 95% of what he says, but I kind of like him because at least he's screaming blue murder, and we need to join forces, all us screaming blue murder, even if it does disagree. Disagreement is not a problem. Truth comes out of argument. But, you know, we're sidetracked all the time. So the joke of the trillion-dollar coin is that there is some kind of loophole that you could actually do it, and that way you just put $1 trillion in the treasury, and the problem solved. The joke, as I understand it, is this is not a real problem. It's an accounting problem being used for political purposes.
Right.
We've already talked about the fact that the deficit is not our problem. Jobs is our problem in America. You know, our deficit is relatively not that big compared to other rich industrial countries. We could pay it if we ever grow again and develop jobs and develop industries instead of giving everything to the banksters who immediately, patriotically transfer it to foreign bank accounts and don't invest a thing in it in America back with it. So that's the joke, I think, here.
Yeah, you know, and in this article, you know, it sounds to me like it's a joke because actually it says in this article that one Republican congressman wants to close, which, you know, you were saying, the loophole that makes the $1 trillion coin an option. And basically, in a nutshell, what they're saying is that they can use this coin to pay off the debt. Now, I also saw another...
Yeah, here you go.
Exactly. I mean, I'm reading it verbatim here.
Yeah.
Now, I saw another news item that they were kind of debating on who they were going to put on the coin. Now, I'm sure the picture behind the coin is going to symbolize who put us in debt. So they're wondering whether they want to use, old Bush.
Take a number.
Or they want to put Obama there, or they even want to put Clinton, which, I don't know, should he even be on that or even mention that?
Let me be, you know, again, we are committed to equal opportunity hate in this program, and I am committed to it not on principle, but simply the way I see the world. But it's a fact that... conservative / Republican, and those terms are complicated, so take them for the nebulous entities that they are. Conservatives, Republicans, overall in modern times, certainly since World War II, are responsible for significantly more every time run bigger deficits. Reagan most notably started the giant deficits. America used to be very low deficits to a point, or short-term wartime deficits, things like that. So the chronic issue, and again, it's not such a big deal, frankly, but the chronic deficits of America are a Reagan era, and then, of course, Bush dramatically. And again, old Bush too. One of the differences is that when they got into hot water, Reagan and Bush won, didn't have such a big deal with raising taxes when taxes had to be raised. Now these people who are certainly staunch conservatives are by comparison pragmatists, you know, do what needs to be done. That's their ideology, but they're not insane in many ways, as I think some people who call themselves conservatives, and that's certainly not including everybody, is the case. Democrats, actually generally, again, the data, for what reason, run smaller deficits. And Clinton even kind of got to a surplus kind of just about. Be careful, I am not so, he was lucky, one.
Sure.
And he said, much like Bush did for Obama, Clinton set up Bush financially really badly, because so much of that, of the the stupid deregulation, the heavy-handed government deregulation, incidentally, when the referee in a game, you know, comes in and radically removes most of the rules of the game. Imagine if football, American football, right? Yeah. If the, we come and we remove all the rules, what that's heavy-handed, you know, intervention right. in the game.
Sure.
So that when you come from the started in the Carter era, or this whole 30-year move of deregulation, and eventually the insanity of the deregulation of the financial markets in the Bush era, most notably, but significantly started under Clinton. That's heavy-handed government. You see what I'm saying? Right. In a negative way, you know, removing three quarters of rules of a game is very heavy-handed interact. Be careful. You're going to change everything, and you don't really know how.
No.
And typically we think deregulation is actually removing the government. No. It's a very heavy-handed, dangerous, and cavalier way for government to intervene.
Now, in your opinion, Dr. Balick, and I've always wondered about this, and, you know, recently with the elections and all that, it's always Reagan this, Reagan that, and, you know, it's all of a sudden they've made a mistake. Saint or a god or something like that. And it depends on which party, because if they want to gain points, one party will say, oh yes, Reagan and this and that, even though they're Democrats and whatever. But in your opinion, as an economist, okay, let's forget about the political opinions and all that. As an economist, in your opinion...
Oh, I do not speak for the profession. I think I've said it, maybe time to repeat myself.
Sure,
I'm representative to some extent of a minority, a large minority of economists, but a minority of economists. You know, the kind of ones who saw the crisis coming.
Sure.
Kind of, so on.
But in your opinion, since the early 1900s all the way up to now, which president do you think was actually a good shepherd of the economy, or at least that tried to... change things around? I mean, I should say, which one was the lesser of the...
Perhaps. That's more comfortable to deal with, because, like the great John Locke said, you know, power corrupts and power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. It's hard to say, you know, it's really, they all have their problems. You know, I used to some extent like Eisenhower, funnily, right? Why? Because he spoke the truth famously at the end of it, before leaving. He warned us that this country is run by the military-industrial complex, a term usually used by the very left wing in the American political system, but actually coined by a military man, military hero, many would say, because he just saw that this country is no longer run for its people. We have a beast in our midst that gained a lot of power during the World War, and does not want to give it up. So I respected him for that. But then you do your homework, you know, and you see, what did he actually do? You know, he did a lot of horrible things too. He really launched the practice that has since become the main practice of foreign policy, where whenever there's democracy, we extend in the death troops or do a coup or somehow, if we're lucky, manage to do it without direct involvement and put in a dictator that will, murder his people on our behalf so we could benefit from their resources. What we call neocolonialism. See, colonialism is you actually have troops on the ground, you know, controlling the country is yours. Neocolonialism is better. It's version 2.0, you know? It's where you don't have to deal with all that mess, you know? You just have it happen far away where nobody...
You mean like having drones?
That's actually probably going back to old colonialism in the sense that it's your hardware. doing the killing.
Okay, sure. Okay.
Neocolonialism is really where you don't. You're like, oh, we love democracy, you know, and but actually the world is governed by, whenever there is democracy, we make take care of it, you know, we destroy it and put a dictator that is our buddy. And you can always find people in any country that are willing to backstab their own population, sadly, you know. There's always one, sadly, or sadly more. So you can always find people that will betray their people for wealth and etc. Like most international aid that actually goes from one bank account in Manhattan to another bank account in Manhattan, you know, never really reaches anywhere, you know. So it's a pretty sad story. But you know, this thing I've been struggling in class. You know, I mean, I have to tell these ugly stories to people and have them. You know, these are kind of historical facts. What are we going to do about it is the question. Don't be in denial. Don't say, no, we are a beacon of freedom. Empires never are beacons of freedom. The big long-term question, other than environment, that America faces in its significant decline today is how to de-imperialize, you know, switch economic model, because this model is untenable. Never mind the ethics for now. Never mind for now the ethics of it, though only for now, because empire is evil almost always. The only excuse for empire is if there's another even worse empire that you are defending from. And during the Soviet days, that may have been the case. But so anyway, I liked Eisenhower, but then I know what he did in Africa and the assassinations. And he famously said he is a son of a, I don't know if that's legal on the radio, no. Probably not, right? A son of a you-know-what. SOB, you can say that probably. He's an SOB, but he's our SOB. That's what President Eisenhower said. Well, in the long run, it's hurt us. It's hurt us more than it helped us. And never mind apologizing like Clinton annoyingly used to like to do, but then business as usual. That's your Clinton for you. You know?
Right.
Oh, we're sorry we raped you for 500 years, Africa and Latin America. Terribly sorry. Of course, we're not even slowing down, but we're sorry.
But you know, that's part of our culture. We apologize after we completely massacred a whole country, and it's all good.
Yeah, live with it. You know, yeah. I mean, my students sometimes have, you know, a hard time. Yeah, you know, genocide. You want to talk about the Indians? You know, let's talk about the Indians. More importantly, let's stop being heavily involved in the largest genocide in history going on in Congo. Look it up. It makes, you know, my people, you know, I'm Jew, genocide during the Holocaust, you know, well, not look good. I mean, you know, I feel I have the right to make snide remarks given that, you know, half my family was gassed, but it's horrible. It's happening now. You know, I always ask myself, how could this happen? How did the world stand by and allow it to happen? How? Like we are doing right now. It's going on in Congo as we speak. And it's going on in order to slightly lower the price of electronics. There's blood on my hands. Here's my wonderful Uber phone that I will not mention what it is, but it's not the Jesus phone.
It's not the Jesus phone.
People don't know that term. Is it so geeky? I am kind of plugged into the geek world. Jesus phone obviously is the, you know, the famous one, right? It starts with an I. But, you know, I have blood on my hands. But I would be willing to pay $50 more for my phone, you know, if I knew that it didn't require mass rape of children and armies of children massacring villages to get access to rare metals in the Congo. I would be willing to. But nobody's selling it, right? It's not available. It's impossible for... There have been actually a couple of attempts for cell phone companies to be... A couple of small-time cell phone companies that... That offered a kind of a clean alternative, if you will, an ethically clean alternative. But they...
That's interesting.
It's interesting. I really play, but they don't have the... What I lovingly call the Lucifer phone, you know? The baddest phone in the world.
And talking about Lucifer, we're going to play a little tune David Bowie, Ashes to Ashes.
Oh, one of the best. First best video clip. I remember when it came out, my brain exploded.
Same here. I was wondering if I had drank too much the night before or something was wrong here.
The first real video clip, 81. Thank you.
say it's true. They got a message from the Action Man. I'm happy, hope you're happy too. I've loved, I love, needed love. Saw the details fall away. The shrieking when nothing is given. Just pictures of Jeff goes in synthesis. And I ain't got no money and I ain't got no hands. But I'm hoping to kick because glad it is glowing. Ashes to ash and fuck to fuck it. We know Major Tom's a junkie, strung out in heaven's high, hitting an all-time low.
With jewels, the killing moon.
too soon. Fate up against your will, through the thick and thin. He will wait until you give yourself to him.
Oh yeah, great song, The Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen. And you are listening to WPRK 91.5, Winter Park, the best in basement radio, and of course, the voice of Rollins College. And we're back here on Punkonomics with Dr. Benny Balick.
I have that album in vinyl at home. I was just telling Jesse, you know, those were the days, you know. Yeah, I remember.
I know.
When I was young and handsome.
Well, I don't know. I saw a few comments there on the net. You got a fan club out there. So,
really?
Yeah. Well hopefully Charlotte's not listening.
For my
You're getting me in trouble too. Oh, you're the pressure. No. So anyway, when we...
Not for my looks, though.
Anyway, when we went to our little music session here, we had just finished talking about the TurboTax and you know, the whole
excuse me. Right. Yeah, we kind of started, you know, because we don't stop just because there's music on, you know, where we keep talking because, well, you know, it's all a chat. So just to fill you in here, the tax system, right? So was that on air or off the air? I think it was on the air that you can't get to the really very wealthy because they have the incentives and the mean to legally often, sometimes illegally, but legally often structure it such that, or even get the rules changed so that they are not even legally liable to pay taxes on a large chunk of their wealth. Of course, they do pay taxes. They even just had a massive argument that's still ongoing. I'll have to pick it up after the show and the class I have after with an old buddy from grad school. We vehemently argue, I suppose I should say, again, Peter Lance, productively, vehemently argue about it. And he keeps pointing out to me that, yeah, I mean, after all, a large chunk of the tax are paid by the wealthy, but of course, well, a much bigger chunk of, as our often guest here, Corey Carroll, told him on the storm that erupted on my posting, which I love. They also take a bigger even share of the loot also. So it's kind of understandable that they also pay a chunk. But anyway, remind me of an issue that is also mired in, you know, ideology and propaganda, and that is the flat tax, the fair tax.
Yes. Tell us about the fat. Is that a myth or?
Well, first of all, it has a history. It comes from the right wing, from conservatives, definitely. And still, in I think it's pretty much only alive, more or less, with a few exceptions of people like me who are kind of straddling, trying to look at things sensibly as. That wonderful caller said, sensible. He said we were sensible. I'm still reeling from that compliment. It's a wonderful compliment. Well, it depends, like so many things, it depends how. You can take simplifying the tax code is an extremely good idea. As Jesse was telling us before, you know, it's so complicated, you miss a lot of stuff. I know I have actually been overpaying taxes for many years here in America, not realizing where I could take a deduction. And thus, you know, and TurboTax not really pointing it out to me either.
And it's too bad you can't go back all those years that you didn't take those deductions, because otherwise you'd be rich.
I
know for sure not. I've given the government way too much money. Yeah. It should be considered charity.
Yeah. Like I said, they got to get it somewhere, you know, because they have to give tax breaks to the wealthy, they have to go to wars and stuff. Very, very, very expensive stuff. But anyway, so it's one of those interesting economic policies, simple tax, fair tax, flat tax. It's been advocated by monetarists like the late Milton Friedman, so very right-wing conservative people for a couple of decades at least. And I am sympathetic in a sense. The simplification, absolutely. This kind of baroque, complex, bureaucratic nightmare, which is the tax code, is a rife, it asks for being played. People can make a lot of money by playing it, and when people can make a lot of money, they generally go ahead and do their best, which is actually, you know, not a bad thing potentially, but has to be harnessed for positive, productive things. So all I got to say is that it depends. The main argument about it is if everybody pays, imagine a silly version, right? Everybody pays 10%. That, of course, that's what we call regressive. That's the count, you know, you take from the poor and give to the rich.
Exactly.
Of course, we've been doing it for 35 years in this country, so maybe, you know, maybe that'll be the next idea. But you could simplify the tax code, remove loopholes, and have it still be progressive in the sense of taking more from the rich than from the poor. On multiple levels, it's a complicated philosophical, ethical issue of why that is actually necessary on one side, and also economically, as again Corey mentioned a few weeks back, that when you give a little cash to a poor person, they immediately spend it in the domestic economy.
Right.
They create jobs.
Right.
You know,
job creators.
When you give
exactly.
$5 to a bum, he is a job creator. When you give it to a wealthy person. He doesn't. He buys imported goods with it, primarily, you know? And yes, My friends, even if you think, oh, he's just going to buy crack with it, well, no, that's creating jobs too. In many ways, I am quite the libertarian, you know. I know my students always complain that I'm hard to pigeon. The moment he's a socialist, the next he's a, you know, libertarian. What the hell? I'm just trying to, again, be sensible about it. There are good ideas on both sides and foolishness on both sides, the way I understand it. And I'm sure I'm wrong on a large chunk of what I think. I'm only human and fallible too, like everybody else. But you see, you could do it right. My concern is, of course, that who is going to be in charge of this new tax policy and simplification? The same guys who are getting paid by the banksters, right? It's what I like to call, and excuse all my liberal friends, the liberal fallacy. The notion that government needs to do all of these things to keep us safe and to make the economy work right. Yes, it does. They're right. They're right, the liberals, on this. Absolutely. The notion of no government. You want no government? Go to Somalia. See if you like it. Right?
Right.
But the problem with the liberal approach is that what government? Our government? Give me a break. Our government are owned and bought and, you know, and paid for. So if we could import, I don't know, a relatively decent government, typically, you know, we think of Norway or Finland. Or, you know, Norway. Norway is one of the most least corrupt, more efficient government in the world. But unfortunately, we don't have their government. We have our government. So that's what I like to call the liberal fallacy, that government should. It should, yeah, but it won't. And it don't. Right? Of course, don't forget, in case, you know, to be the equal opportunity, the conservative fallacy is observing the inefficiencies and corruption of our government and then concluding that we should simply become the property of private corporations. And come on, that's just as silly, if not even sillier.
It's almost like the movie The Matrix, where basically just...
No, that's what I'm showing in my class today.
Awesome. I wish I was in that class. Of course, this is another reason why the system doesn't work and education needs to be funded. I mean, I wasn't able to be in your class.
Yeah, there's that rule, right, that you absolutely have. People are, I know, a lot of our whole students are working full-time, and then they are, in order to get their assistance, right, they have to take 3 classes. Yes. We are aware of it. It's a major problem.
I know. Oops. We got a caller.
Somebody.
Okay, let's see. Let's entertain a listener.
No, please. Oh, we're actually trying to go.
Not best, you know.
Okay, if that caller would call us right back, yeah. For some reason,
if we're running out of time, remember that if you don't, I mean, if you're one of those brave, pure people that aren't on Facebook, you know, email, you hear my name on the show, you know, Benny Benjamin Balak, you know, Google me. Oh dear, I shouldn't say that because you might find something. Oh dear.
No, but there is a webpage, a Facebook, Punkonomics.
Yeah, there's punkonomics.org, which is a WordPress kind of blog, basically. Find a way. We will respond. I do my best, you know. Sometimes I drop off the planet, you know, but then I'm back. For the past 2 weeks.
And of course, you can catch us here every Friday from 9 to 10, yeah. You know, on your usual Punkonomics show.
Absolutely. So yeah, please give us, you know, argue, tell us why we're wrong, you know, all of that is always very, very welcome.
All right, so we're getting close to the top of the hour here, yep. And the army of Fight Back Friday is here, Derek. Ready to take back Friday and take you to a different level. Hopefully one higher than the one we just took you to.
Fight Back Army.
Yeah.
Viva la revolución.
Young, exactly. anyway, folks, let's just go ahead and leave you with a tune, kind of a little new wave this year. And of course, the reason I'm playing this one is because one of our Orlando residents is a member of this band. Guess who this person is, or let's say, guess who this band is.
We were at a party, here low fell in the day. Someone reached in and grabbed it. What a rock, lots of stuff.
Okay, the person is Fred Schneider, and this is the B-52s, Rock Lobster. I'm sure a lot of you, all folks back there, and including myself, I remember these days. Anyway, you have been listening to Punkonomics with Dr. Benny Balick and Jesse Velez, your host. We will see you again next Friday at 9 o'clock. Have a great Friday and weekend. And don't forget the organic catnip at 3 a.m. all the way to 7 this Saturday with Mr. Catnip. Have a great weekend. Thank you.